we have going on recently.
It was written long before Trump was a glimmer in any Republican's eye.
Yes, so because like it all seems extremely relevant. It all seems extremely relevant. However, it just goes along with the overarching of just the sphere and the what's going on in the world. So, can you speak to a little bit too?
Well, I think a lot of the ways that I tend to write lyrics aren't directly. They're not really reactionary to specific events. It's more exploring political ideology, and like. It's weird. I don't think people cared as much about my lyrics for the last EP that we put out in, like, 2014. Mm-hmm. I think people were, like, a little more weirded out by some of the ideas in it. But now that, like, more people are wondering if like, the fracturedness of the left has contributed to rising fascism in the USA, and now that people are a little more open to critiquing neoliberalism or talking about, like, toxic masculinity in political policy, I guess people are more like, wow, tell me more about your ideas. But it's not, yeah, nothing in our record had to do directly with like, the Trump administration coming to power in the USA.
Oh, thank you.
And naturally, the lesson to be learned, I think, if the lyrics that were written 2 or 3 years ago still seem relevant today, is that, like, this shit started a while ago. Like, you know, the seeds that were planted for Trump to be able to be elected, you know, go way back before Trump and run much deeper than that in the American psyche. And they're really, like, deep-rooted issues that need to be addressed at, like, an institutional, you know, foundational ideological level.
Right. Like, America was built broken. So seeing what happened on November 8th is... a very understandable outcome if you just trace the history of what the USA is built on.
No, I totally agree. It just seems as if it's always relevant.
Sure, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's more like it's when people talk about us being like more relevant now, that's more just like weird narratives that like music writers use to be like read my thing, you know. But
Yes. So tonight, actually, at 333, this will be your 10th show of your tour. And can you speak a little bit about how your fans have really taken up to the album as you've made your way from east to west?
We've been really excited about how many people have been coming out to the shows, and a lot of familiar faces and new ones as well. But it's been really great that the people that liked our band before this record are still fans. You know, it wasn't like material that alienated them or what didn't seem relevant in terms of like our catalog, but it definitely is really cool that I think like the way that the album was recorded and just the songs themselves are a little bit more accessible to new people. And that's exciting, you know.
Yes, so you've also had two shows in Canada already, so in Montreal and in Quebec. Do you feel like a difference? So I'm from Washington, D.C. as well. So everything, pretty much, you just feel that you have to be involved politically in this sphere because it's just always all the way around you. But do you feel when you go to Canada that it just feels a little bit different?
Well, it's like as soon as you cross the border going over like towards Toronto, it's just literally the landscape changes, you know, and it's a different climate up here, but it's really good to be here, so you know.
It does feel different over here.
It's kind of funny to hear you say that, because I always thought of like Canadians as being more politically engaged than Americans, but I don't know.
Sure.
I have no idea if that's true. Like I was like a young person in the U.S. for so long, it was just being like, why is no one else upset in that protest? And then like I guess maybe my only big exposure to Canadians or like young Canadians who were like activists and artists, so it's probably like tinted my view, so I have no idea actually.
You're right though, I think living in DC or coming from DC, it feels a little more immediate the way that people get involved and are just thinking directly about current events in a way that like you're engaging with protests and with direct action and things like that. I think maybe it's a different experience for people who don't live in a city where like the federal government is there or something.
Yeah, where you can see all the spheres all at once. So it was pretty much with your art, you talked about, I saw you talk previously about like accelerationism and about how the administration really forces so much information that you really can't unpack it before there's something new that comes out. And so with your EP coming out like 3 years after your first EP, do you feel a pressure to keep up art as well as make it really good quality and being able to influence your audience?
I think that once you're in the culture industry, you do feel this like anxiety being pushed on you to like make new stuff. Come on, stay relevant, like do new stuff. Yeah, I think we've felt that as a band. We were all definitely really impatient to get this record out. And sometimes because it took so long for us at different points in time, I think we all felt like, damn, is this ever actually going to come out? But like, I think that resisting schedules that are dictated by the market rather than your own ideas or creativity is like one way of many that you can fight a culture that doesn't care about art, a culture that is like increasingly fascistic. You know, I think that's what art is so important to all of us, and it's cool to have made a record where that's actually also a theme in it. It's like how important art is for people on an individual level and on a community level. And I do think that that goes hand in hand with fighting fascism in a way that people don't always consider.
And the music system is definitely set up like in a way that's antithetical to that. Like, not only from like just trying to live and like pay your rent, but also from like a more emotional, sociological kind of level. Like everything's hinged on a press cycle around album releases. So like you tour a lot, you make a lot of money. Once you release an album, you sell that album, you know, like you get all this attention, all this press, like, you know, like adoration or whatever. And like, so the record labels or like, you know, even whoever you're working with, if you're like we run our own record label, but we still have to work with other people, they're really pushing you to do that because all their jobs kick into action once there's a press cycle around an album release. And so it's really hard to like, you know, it really is set up to just like, it's to make the product, which is disheartening. Yeah. And like it's actually like an important thing we have to like work with as artists who are like fostering your own community is like creatively like rethinking systems that like that are sustainable, that maintain work and quality and like but also like emotional and creative health, you know, so that you're not just being pushed to like put out an album every year if that's not. Because, I mean, who knows? Maybe 1 year you should put out 3 albums and then you shouldn't put one out for 6 years if that's, like, where your mind or creativity is at. But, like, there's not really there's not a system built around creativity. There's a system built around capitalism, like, around making money.
Yeah, the commodification of the music. Because I saw just how you tried to explain your music as not really in a specific genre. And I thought of that as a way maybe to battle back against the music as a commodity, art as a commodity. So could you speak a little bit about your music and how do you feel it transcends from different genres? Because I saw one reference in your in the song Appropriate. I think it's the first song off the album. And it's about I've tasted maggots, I've ate bugs, I've tasted maggots. Is George Clinton the kind of story your adventure is looking for? And, you know, George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic have Maggot Brain as an album. And so so I like the connection between funk and your guys' music is...
Totally. I mean, we all love George Clinton, but like, that song is about cultural appropriation and was more supposed to be like one, it's almost like one character is trying to say like I'm authentic, like I've done these things, but really the other person's like, is George Clinton the kind of story your adventure is looking for? Like, is that really your story, or are you just like trying on that outfit? I think that, like, especially white artists have to really consider how much access you have. Not just white artists. You could just extend this to, like, people of more privilege have more access to more resources. And, like, how can you responsibly interact with that and not just be cannibalizing other people's experiences or things like that? Wrote the lyrics to that after, like, reading a weird... like somebody's new record had come out. This was years ago. And the story was like, this is about like just some cool guys like discovering New York City. And it just felt really weird to see this like story about like straight white guys being like, yeah, they're discovering this. It was like New York's been there a long time.
Yeah, like almost like colonialism of New York City. Like,
urban experience.
And I'm sure it wasn't like their intention to be like, that's what we made our record about. It was probably more like somebody was like, I need to come up with a really simple story for like selling this record and writing about it. But like it was just the lyrics were like a meditation on that. And yeah, it is something that we all think about a lot because we don't think in terms of specific genres when we're listening to music, being a fan of music or writing music. But at the same time, I know that like I'm influenced by black music, I would feel uncomfortable with like benefiting off of an association from that that's mm-hmm. like doing more for me than it is for like what I am taking from, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
just like trying to explore. A lot of my lyrics are less about like this is right and this is wrong, and more just like meditating on some different ideas.
I think when I first started listening to music, one of the records that like really drew me in was Parliament's "The Clones of Dr. Funkenstein," because that cover is just so outrageous, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it's just like one of them strapped to a table, and then George Clinton's like, "Whoa," you know. And I'm like, "What are these aliens?" You know. And I'd listen to that record like every day for months and months and months. But yeah, just backing on what Katie says, I think we all have pretty eclectic tastes, and you know, it'd be really boring to just kind of do the same thing like over and over and over again. It's funny because like my dad, who's like the biggest square ever, like bless his heart, I love him, but he always is like, oh Gideon, you know, you all have to like sound like Led Zeppelin 4. Like that's his only only
cool
frame
advice.
Of it's only his only frame of like reference for rock music, it seems. And it's like, oh well, you know, I get it, because it's like the whole record like sounds like different genres, or it sounds like different like bands, but there's still like a cohesiveness to like the same thing. And you know, like I think we really captured that in this record, is a lot of different tastes with like a linear cohesiveness. So
I really enjoyed the record. I think it's amazing.
Thanks.
like from just the messages, as my friend would say, he thinks you have bars, you know.
Okay.
You've got bars.
Cool.
And,
I appreciate that.
But like for me is something that I struggle with, and I'm sure everybody is, just how do you prevent like feminism and being conscious and woke and really understanding these things to prevent them from being commodified and commercialized.
That is like a hugely important question, I think, right now. And I don't think that like any of us know the answer, but it's something that we meditate on a lot. Like when we started this band, at least for us in our reality in DC, or our scene of friends, or what we were paying attention to, it didn't seem like it was very trendy or cool to have like very political, quote unquote, for lack of a better word, music, or be directly confrontational with things like this. So we were like, we're gonna do that just to like get in people's faces. And now we're like maybe 5 years in, we're in a little bit different of a reality where like more people on the mainstream and underground musicians are like, I think we're in really dire times, so people want to talk about that more. But like I think especially in the social media age, people are often like performing to each other to communicate, and like using the right words without actually engaging in ideas, or like I'm going to reblog this thing about a protest so that like I seem like I get it. But like, and it's important to communicate. That is our language. But like, we have to take into account our actions as well. And like, I don't know. I'm not like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, there's really no, it's no right answer.
There's no right answer. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you're a poser if you talk about that stuff or like use social media to communicate about it. But like, I would hope that it is something that all of us are like interrogating ourselves about, you know, and being like, am I really actually about that? Or am I just like, yeah, right on, like reblog, retweet, like yeah. button, you know?
Even if you really do have like good intentions or like are really like in it or whatever, there's still like the bigger struggle for me at least is still on that front is how do you stop your art from being co-opted to benefit somebody else more than it's benefiting it's like than existing on its own terms. You know, like your art has to have integrity and that's like a struggle every day because like we need money to make the art we make. Yeah, you know, it's like the studio where they're like, I like you. You can just use it for free, you know? Like definitely not. You know, and like even our friends that we want to work with, like we wanna pay them and we do pay all of them because we think it's important like that we not use free labor because that's fucked up. You know what I mean? And that like creates an unfair dynamic that benefits people with capital. But that said, we still do have to, at times, engage people with capital. And I think the question I always go into decisions like that, and it sounds so like competitive and weird, but I don't know how else to engage with capitalism besides a very competitive and aggressive mindset, is this going to benefit what I'm trying to say more, or is it going to benefit them more? So if I do like a show for like at a House of Vans, and they're going to give me, like $3,000. What can I do with that money? Or is the marketing of my image that's going to legitimize Vans, like image, are they going to get more out of that? And it's really hard because capitalism, the premise of it is set up so that the capitalists are always exploiting, getting more out of your label than you are getting out of it. And so to challenge that, you really have to be like cunning as fuck. Like, it's always, you fail a lot, you know, like you do to get co-opted a lot. And it's like a very real struggle. And I don't, you know, like it's going to take a lot of fucking creativity and art to figure out an answer to that question, you know.
Like everything is sold and you want to be in that medium where you're like the antithesis, where you can help people and help build this community where we're all working together. However, you still need to work within capitalism to.
And you're never going to be able to like be outside of it because once you're outside of it, you can't actually engage with it and try to dismantle it. So it is this very weird and ever evolving labyrinth.
Or like a tango is the word Kay's used a lot, which I really like. Because I do have friends that like, it's like one of me and my first boyfriend when I was like 18 in college, like it was like a really big disagreement with us. Like he went to go live on an intentional community. He's like, I just don't think there's any way to engage with these things without like dirtying my hands or like whatever. I just don't think it's worth it. Like, and I was like, cool, you're going to live in your intentional community and like everything's going to go wrong in the world. And then like when we have like a new, like when the world gets nuked to hell, you're just going to die with the rest of us.
That's one thing I wish the left would engage with more is like a lot of people approach with this mindset. I think you see it in punk, you see it in activism, you see it in a lot of places, like this almost religious purity ideal of like, I don't want to engage with the enemy. I don't want like anything to be co-opted or like then it will be destroyed. But it's like, you got to get your hands dirty.
And the fear to talk about dirtiness is honestly because it's a way of avoiding, it's people avoiding conversation where they have to like foreground their privilege, you know, because a lot of the conversations are going to be like, if you're really going to go into it, you're going to be like, well, this is a little easier for me because like I'm a white middle class kid that grew up in Colorado, you know, like I have a very different toolbox and like set of things, you know, or like even if it's just like there's an emotional level, an economic level, like I can think of so many fucking examples. But you really have to go into, you know, like when you're going to have those frank of discussions, your privilege and the things that you have entering into that transaction are going to have to be talked about. And those are uncomfortable conversations for a lot of liberals to have. And they don't necessarily want to have them.
Yeah, I genuinely agree because you you see that people aren't really ready for what mm-hmm. what comes next, you know, as if we understand that everybody, you know, we understand we have a privilege. Me as a man, I have a privilege. And are you ready to give that up?
Right. Or like, even are you ready to just like acknowledge it and like use it in a way that can be helpful to the group almost? Like, yeah, it's like we are a band of white people. Like, how can we square with that, you know? And like, yeah, I think sometimes that's a weird thing with feminism too, is people are like, yeah, that's just like man hating or blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's so not about that, actually. Yeah,
it's not about men.
Right. Yeah, or like feminism, when you really get to the root of it, for me at least, is actually about like everyone being able to see their own humanity and other people's humanity that much more, you know?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, and sometimes that manifests in a way of like, you know, men taking up less space, or sometimes that manifests in a way of like men taking up more space to be like, actually, I am, you know, I support this, or like blah, blah, blah. And the same goes with like dismantling white supremacy, I think, too, is like, you're never going to be like not white. So like, don't be embarrassed. Like talk about that and figure out ways that you can, like, especially right now with what's going on in the USA with like the government is literally going to people's houses and like taking them and removing them from our country. So like, how can people who were born in the USA like come to terms with like the privileges that they have and like try to protect people and like their communities more?
Yeah, from just being born in these imaginary borders.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Is there a so I want to play a song off the album. So which of your song of the, your songs, which one do you think most represents you all, or and how you and what mood you guys are in today, and what you're going to be bringing to the show tonight?
That is tough.
I feel like if we're gonna hype the show, we should do like a party jam. So I would suck. Yeah. I'd just suck.
Suck. Okay, I like that one. So
cool.
There's a version of this somewhere. It's like actually 7 minutes long. It's really cool. All
right. Well, you're gonna be listening to "Suck" by Priest.
Come on.
So you're back with CITR here on 101.9 with Priest and with their song Suck off of their album. Can you guys just talk a little bit about the inspiration for Suck?
For me, originally, it kind of sounded like the Raincoats when we were writing it. But then when we took it into the studio, we were kind of thinking, like, this is too linear, so we need to, like, just kind of make it sonically come out. So then we started thinking of, there's a Talking Head song, I think it's Born Under Punches is the one that we were, like, listening to how that grows as the song goes on. And so, like, we were adding in some auxiliary percussion and different instruments. So those are the two main ones for me. But I think my bandmates were all coming at it from different places.
We had our very talented friend Mark Cineros play auxiliary percussion of like cowbells and bongos, scrapers. We had some vibraphone parts that he wrote and we collaborated on, and he played saxophone and bass clarinet. He just really added a lot. And what was cool is we gave him like a good framework of what to go on. And then he also, like on the longer version that Danielle was referencing earlier, he took some of our ideas. He went really far out with it. And one of the things they did in Born Under Punches that was the inspiration for this is the way that it's recorded is kind of like an electronic song where you can mute different parts, you know, and bring it back in. And that was one thing we did a lot in the editing of this. So
it's kind of interesting. Katie was talking about like the Raincoats influence when we were writing it, because like the second I heard the bass line, I was like, this is like a dance single for sure. I was like, and I've always wanted to like play more disco beats, although I'm really bad at them. So this like song is just like such a struggle for me to be like, I'm going to play it like this because I really like, I'm not going to be a rock drummer, I'm going to be a disco drummer. But I mean, I immediately always thought of it and more along like, you know, kind of ESG, like those kind of lines. And yeah, definitely. And we were on tour with Shopping right before. And like, I think there's a lot of influence of there. They have like a really good dancey thing going on too.
Yeah. And this song originally didn't have like that second part where it kind of opens up, but I wrote the bass line and that's kind of where the song started. And I think, like, I was just, I don't know, messing around in practice. I play guitar also, so I kind of, like, went off of the same bass line in more of, like, a chord-shaped pattern, but it's still single-picked. And that's when the, like, more melodic part at the end opens up, and I think it just added something new. And
yeah, no, you can feel the energy in the track, and it continues to build throughout the song. So
yeah,
no, so... really, thank you for having you on.
Thank you for having us.
I really, really appreciate it. Is there anybody you'd like to shout out? You guys can feel free.
Well, I want to shout out to y'all for being from D.C. and to see some D.C. heads.
They said, y'all, you can't see Mo in the corner. he likes to stay in the cut.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so we have a certificate for you for your band. So we understand that freedom is a contract.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yes.
I haven't read this.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic, and it's really just talking about the intersectionality between, just really between all the struggles and how we need art and we need all types of different everybody to work together so that we can continue to create the world that we want. So
thank you.
This is going to be very, very, very heavily read in the van. So thank you for this gift.
West, so awesome.
Yeah.
This must be like brand new.
I got it for Christmas and I read it, and so I'm
for our listeners at home,
you're re-gifted.
It's a brand new Angela Davis book, "Freedom Is a Constant Struggle," Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement. This is great.
We'll
333 tonight.
Yeah, 333 tonight. Oh, so good.
7:30 is that when doors are?
And we're on tour with Steph Chura, who's amazing. If you haven't had a chance to check out her stuff, listen to it after you listen to Prince.
It's gonna be a great show.
So it's 333. It's right off East Hastings. Here at 7:30, downtown in Gastown. You can check out Priest with Steph Chura and Lie tonight.
Or Lie, I don't know.
The kind man who escorted us in said that they were an excellent local band. So.
And Andy knows a ton about music here in Vancouver.
Okay.
So
we'll trust Andy.
Trust Andy. So thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much for having us.
Oh, no problem.
was nice to your new band. You will not be okay. 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 You are not one of us. You will not be
my slacking scholar, your grades are falling. Heed the answer, your parents calling.
Interested in starting a project to benefit the representation or experiences of historically disadvantaged groups within the UBC community?
Apply for funding through the Equity Enhancement Fund, which supports community-based initiatives that enhance equity, diversity, inclusion, and intercultural understanding at UBC.
It's open to UBC students, faculty, and staff. The deadline is February 28, 2017.
More information can be found at equity.ubc.ca/EEF-fund.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
Most days, my partner and I pass through the world unnoticed. He's a he, I'm a she, and that makes us invisible. Except the time we crossed the border into the U.S. My partner wasn't a citizen of either country, so we had to park our car and request special permission to enter. At that time, his passport didn't indicate that he was male. So, as he had done many times before, he calmly explained why. The guard showed no expression. She simply nodded and left the counter with his passport, disappearing into a